Ramsey TV.
Folks, before I get started here, I want to tell you a principle upon which I operate that actually helps make me the world's most outspoken Bible scholar. That is, I hold to the premise that the truth will be known. That there will be people, and you have to be discerning, and you have to find them. But God will make sure that there are people who have the truth. From the edge of the bottom of the Florida Peninsula for today, this is Martin Zender, your host on MZTV. I say for today because later today I'm going to be flying to my home state of Ohio. I'm going to visit my family. I told you my kid had a couple kids. Going to see how they're doing. Going to visit my sister. And I don't like to travel these days. I don't know. I feel kind of uneasy about it. I don't know why exactly. Just a sixth sense? Ooh, I don't know. Maybe. But I forge ahead. Oh, before I talk about this principle, I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday, and I shared a belief of mine that met with great enthusiasm, which is the one thing that frees you in this life to be yourself, to live, to truly live, and that is to no longer fear death. If you are delivered from the fear of death, then the whole world opens up to you. Opportunities open up to you to do things, to, quote, take chances, unquote, to truly live. As I've said concerning this CV19er thing, people have stopped living because of fear. Fear will cause you to stop living. And of course, the biggest fear is induced by religion, which teaches eternal torment and free will. These two things in combination make you think that your salvation is in your own hands, that you can sin your way out of God's favor, and then you just live carefully, so carefully. Paul says, be careful for nothing. That's one translation of Philippians 4:6. He says, don't worry about anything. Well, that's pretty good too, isn't it? Don't worry about anything. Another way that's translated is be careful for nothing. Now, I'm not saying you don't wear your seatbelt. I'm not saying you drive 120 miles an hour. You know, I'm not saying you drink drain cleaner. I'm just saying that by living, the prodigal son, for instance, the prodigal son, he did some bad things, but he lived. He had this hankering to get his father's inheritance, go out, spend it with wanton, riotous living. Not a great idea, but we have such a wide place in Christ, a wide place, that even when we so-called go off the rails, there's production happening. The prodigal got a great realization. It was a parable, I understand that, but the lesson is the prodigal son got a great realization by experiencing all those things. And he comes back to his father with a greater appreciation of what he had. And his father throws a party for him. A party. And the lesson is that there's more rejoicing in heaven when one sinner comes to the faith than there is from, you know, 100 people who are living mild, quiet, straight as an arrow lives. I'm not degrading those kind of lives. But the stories that are extremely interesting are the ones where people live dangerously, even live not carefully, and by doing so, they open up for themselves vast array of experiences that God sews together to make for a richer life with great lessons learned, great pearls of wisdom gained. And it's more fun to live this way also. It's more freaking fun. David said, one of the Psalms, "You have set my feet on a wide place." What does that mean? Well, the opposite is setting your feet on a narrow place. Have you ever seen the Walendas on the tightrope walks? Carl Walenda, the great tightrope walker, or Philippe Petit, who, back in the day, walked on a wire between the World Trade Centers in New York City. That's not a wide place. There's not much margin for error. Or when you watch these gymnasts on a balance beam, these people are tortured. Their whole future relies on them staying balanced on this very narrow beam. You can say, well, yeah, but that's only for a brief time during their performance. Yeah, but that's their success or failure rests on staying on that narrow thing. It's ridiculous. But some people live their entire life like they're on a balance beam. And the strange thing is that if somebody were to set a very narrow bridge across a chasm, and I'm talking about not even a bridge, but a walkway that is maybe 6 inches wide. It's solid. We're not talking Walenda type daring do here, but just imagine the care. You'd be like one step in front of the other. You'd be concentrating on every step. You'd be looking down all the time, worried about a gust of wind that's going to take you down. But now imagine that you're going across the same chasm on a bridge like the Golden Gate Bridge when you have all kinds of room. You're just walking along whistling, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, but possibly you're walking on the same 6 inches. You see what I mean? You're on the same path. You don't deviate from it, but you're relaxed because you look to the left, you have safety. You look to the right, you have safety. Front and back, you have safety, and so you relax. People like the Walendas, somehow they train themselves to relax on a wire. They're relaxed. The best gymnasts are relaxed on that balance beam. David said, "You have set my feet on a wide place." It means that we're not on a narrow beam. We're not on a 6-inch concrete bridge going across deadly chasms. We're actually like on the runway of an airport. We're on a runway. More than that. Pave the whole airport, and as far as you can see, you have level concrete. What can happen to you? You're not going to fall anywhere. So you dance. You pirouette. You run. You jump. You live. Because you feel safe. In Christ, we are safe. It's a gift to have your feet set on a wide place. This wide place is the acceptance of God. The wide place we are on. Going along with that is being delivered from the fear of death. So think of what we have. It's a dual blessing. We not only have this beautiful, wide place to dance upon, to live upon, to go upon, to love upon. But we don't fear our demise because we know we're in Christ. I mean, it's incredible freedom. It's practical. If you actually realize it, come to a realization of it, it's totally practical. What I'm telling you, this safety, this gorgeous acreage of grace that we have to gallivant around upon, does that, yeah, okay, is that good? All right. Other people look at us like we're crazy. You people are living dangerously. We're living. We're not hiding. We're not afraid to go out. This phenomenon of the CV19er has shown me a lot of things. It's shown me what fear does to people. It paralyzes them. You can't breathe. You can't go out. You can't pass somebody without covering your mouth. Jesus Christ, just live, will you? Live. So you get it. So what? I'll tell you what a rebel I am. I mean, I'm going to confess something to you right here on MZTV. Why not? I'm MZ. I can do it. Before this thing happened, I was always careful. In fact, I had a bottle of hand cleanser in my car. And every time I came into my car from the store, I would do that whole thing. I did this before the freaking CV19er. But now after this thing has come, it's upset. It's pissed me off so much that I don't do that anymore. It's like, screw it. I'm going the opposite direction. Oh, Martin, you're taking a terrible chance. Am I? Or am I building antibodies? Am I allowing myself to be exposed to the elements in life that God put there for better or worse and just dive into them? I told you when I was swimming in the ocean, I'm swimming through these schools of fish. I see a stingray underneath me. It's like, woohoo, swim away, kids, swim away. You're in a wide place. Live. Look at the fish. Look at that stingray. I know other people that won't even put a toe in the ocean because there might be a stingray. There might be a jellyfish. In the spiritual realm, God might be disappointed with me. God might condemn me if I do the wrong things. God might take away my salvation. Then there's those who fear addiction. I'm not making light of anybody that has an addiction. As you know, my theory on this is that most addictions stem from religious prohibitions early in life. Because you want the thing you can't have. You got guys like James Dobson, who, you remember back in the day, in the 70s, there's this anti-porn campaign. Anti-Playboy magazines at Walmart campaign. Anti-billboards with attractive women campaign. The theory was, this theory is stupid as can be, but this is the mindset, this was the mindset, probably still is, of James Dobson. Is the guy still alive? And it's the mindset of many Christians, is that they assume that everything is a gateway drug. Yeah, you can't look at a Playboy magazine, or the next thing you'll know, you'll be dismembering women in your basement. Yes. One glance at a bikini-clad model on the billboard. One glance, and the next thing you know, you'll become a rapist. Yes. It's inevitable. It's the inevitable road to destruction. Everyone will be Ted Bundy. Yes. Look at a woman in the grocery aisle. Next thing you know, you'll be assaulting her in the frozen food section of the grocery store. One sip of alcohol, and you'll be a drunkard. It's guaranteed. One sip, and you're done. One sip, and you're done. The Amish think this. They can't tolerate one little sin because it leads. Everything's a gateway drug. It leads to this. It leads to that. Does it? Not in my experience. Maybe in some people's experience, but I think that happens when you fear it. When it's the forbidden fruit and you're walking on that narrow, narrow, narrow way. Yeah, it's true. Jesus said narrow is the way that leads to life. That's the circumcision gospel. It was presented to them as a narrow way. But even that, they all failed the narrow way. They all fell off the wagon. They all fell off the beam. And it ends up that God just miraculously puts his law in their hearts. So it ends up being a wide way, but we had to see the failure by forcing people to walk on the narrow beam. It doesn't work. So now we have a new evangel of grace that David kind of sees ahead to in a way, maybe prophesies a little bit about it. You have set my feet on a wide place. Now we have all this realm. Some people think, yes, now we have a realm. We can sin. Oh my God. It's too big of a realm. We can't trust people on it. And that's a very real thing. People can't trust themselves with grace. I've heard preachers say, well, yeah, grace is a great thing, but we can't tell that guy about it. We can't tell her about it. My God, you got to keep the message of grace from them. Why? Don't they deserve to know it? Well, they'll take advantage of it. One taste of grace, next thing you know, they're the Unabomber. Next thing you know, Ted Bundy. That's religious bondage for you. We have the opposite. Yeah, they don't call it bondage for nothing. See, ties you up in knots. The word religion in the Latin comes from the root word leg. You see that leg in there? R-E-L-I-G, leg. That means to tie or to bind. To tie or to bind. People live their lives like this, not with visible bonds, but with the invisible bonds of self-induced guilt based on misinformation about God. I was supposed to tell you my principle. My principle is, isn't that how I started? The truth will be known. Someone somewhere will have the truth. I didn't plan on saying any of what I just said. I had notes, other notes. I don't know how these things happen. But I just told you the truth. You found it here from a guy in his kitchen. Am I the only one that has truth? No, but not many do. But God will provide a way. It's always there. Down through the ages, it's always been there. Maybe a small group, maybe a little organization, maybe somebody in his car. Maybe a guy on the internet going, look at this comet coming into the Revelation 12 sign. You remember that? The conception comet. Look at this. Look what I found on this stellar software. Somebody's got it. Somebody's got it. It takes discernment to find it. But those who seek diligently for it, God promised to give it to them. Jesus promised to give it to them. I think it's known as seek and you shall find.